Elon Musk may be in trouble again over a tweet. On Monday, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission asked a judge to hold the Tesla CEO in contempt, saying the billionaire violated last year's court order that required Musk to seek pre-approval of any written communications, including social media posts that had information material to Tesla or its shareholders. The SEC pointed to this tweet from Musk posted last week that says Tesla made zero cars in 2011, but will make around 500K in 2019.
With his next North Korean summit just around the corner, Trump seems to be playing hard and softball. The U.S. president on Sunday emphasized sanctions, saying that pressure on the North is still full on, but also said, again, he's in no rush for progress.
These are the phones that everyone wants to see at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, the new folding handsets from Huawei and Samsung. Just two problems, though. One, you can't get your hands on them. They're kept in locked glass cases like valuable artworks. Two, even if you can get your hands on them, they're fiercely expensive. $2,600 for the Huawei. That has some smaller rival manufacturers thinking, well, maybe here's an opportunity for us to catch up with different ideas. Long, cheap or folding, though, it seems right now all these manufacturers are playing catch up to Huawei and Samsung.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's February 26th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Here we are with another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Lots going on in the world of business this morning. You heard some of it there in the opening montage. We'll touch on Elon Musk in just a second. You heard the smartphone prices there. Are you ready for a $2,600 smartphone? I don't know about that yet. More coming on. We'll have more intel from around the world this morning and the markets, too. Today on the program, McDonald's franchisees are a little concerned about the financial arrangements of the delivery deal at McDonald's. Jonathan Mays will be here today from Restaurant Business Magazine to talk a little bit more about this in our first segment this morning. In our second segment, colleges now working to address a spike in student stress and anxiety. And yes, money is one of those central anxiety points. At 5:40 this morning, we'll talk to a reporter who's been covering some of this, tell you what colleges are doing specifically. So stay tuned this morning. A great show for you here on The Opening Bell. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, The Opening Bell rings this morning after stocks surged on Wall Street yesterday following news that President Trump is pushing back his trade deadline with China. This morning, though, markets, the futures are negative on the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P, anywhere from 0.25% to 1/3. As we head to the opening bell later this morning, in Europe, markets are generally lower as well. In London, down by more than 1%, nearly 84 points. In France, down nearly 0.25%. And in Germany, by about a fraction. In Asia, markets in the red as well. The Nikkei ending the day down about 78 points, nearly 1/3. In China and also around the rest of Asia, off by 0.5% to a little bit more than 0.5% in the markets there. And oil is at $55.49 a barrel, which is trading flat this morning. You heard in the opening montage, the Securities and Exchange Commission reportedly wants Tesla CEO Elon Musk to be held in contempt over his social media post. Bloomberg News reports that the regulatory agency claimed Musk has broken an October settlement that required him to get pre-approval for posting about the car company on social media. Shares of Tesla dropped more than 15% after the news broke yesterday. The Justice Department is asking a federal judge to approve a settlement that will allow pharmacy chain and benefits manager CVS to merge with health insurance Aetna. The Justice Department made the request of D.C. Circuit Judge Richard Leon yesterday. The judge criticized the government, CVS, and Aetna late last year for closing the $69 billion merger before the court signed off on it. The Justice Department approved the deal in October on the condition that Aetna sells its Medicare prescription drug program. And in England, the Bank of England ready to pump more liquidity into the UK financial system as it prepares for the country's scheduled exit from the European Union on March 29th. In a statement, the bank says it will hold liquidity actions on a weekly basis rather than monthly from March through the end of April. It did that also around the time of the Brexit referendum in 2016. front and center this morning. Financial arrangement of the McDonald's delivery program has some franchisees a little concerned about whether or not they're going to see a full return on this. You know, McDonald's has been working with delivery now for quite some time. Jonathan Mays of Restaurant Business Magazine is with us this morning to have a conversation about this. Jonathan, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
So the problem here is, I guess, McDonald's has been doing this McDelivery for some time now with Uber Eats. The partnership began in 2017. Why are franchisees a little concerned about this?
Well, so franchisees, if you understand what the franchise relationship is like, you know, franchisees are the ones that have to make profit off of the food. And they pay a fairly substantial sum in terms of royalties and rent to McDonald's, a franchisor. And they pay that based on a percentage of their sales. So they'll pay about like 13 to 15% rent. They'll pay another percentage of as a royalty. And what franchisees say in this situation is they don't want to pay that that percentage. They want to get a break on what they pay to the franchisor based on the fee that they have to pay for Uber Eats. So Uber Eats is what, companies like Uber Eats and DoorDash and whatnot, they charge a commission as you would, because they deliver the food, and that commission can be anywhere from about 12.5% to about 30%, and McDonald's pays on the low end of that. So what franchisees say is they don't want to have to pay royalties on the money that they have to pay to Uber Eats.
So they are worried about whether or not they can make the money that needed to continue on this. Is it one of those? Is it that drastic enough situation where some franchisees are losing money on the deal?
Well, yeah, they don't like the they don't like the profitability of it. They're concerned about what its impact is on their cash flow. Interestingly enough, in a survey that the McDonald's Franchisee Association conducted, they like the service. They think the service, overwhelmingly, they think that they should offer delivery. I think they believe that McDonald's needs to renegotiate its deal with Uber Eats. And then there's also this issue that they don't like the fact that they have to pay this royalty on the money that they send to Uber Eats.
How likely are they to get some renegotiation here with McDonald's?
That's a really good question. They've been relatively successful so far, they've won some definite concessions from McDonald's, some leaders of the Franchisee Association have won spots on McDonald's internal franchisee leadership board, which is very important. So they've done a pretty good job of sort of winning concessions from McDonald's, as they've done with the remodel project. McDonald's has been negotiating with them on certain elements of that project to give franchisees more flexibility. This will be a really good question about whether they'll be able to win this one. I think they'll be able to win some concessions on this.
And part of that probably is because McDonald's, I mean, delivery is pretty important to McDonald's, and by all accounts, this delivery service is working well for the bottom line.
It clearly is generating some sales at times that McDonald's usually doesn't generate them. So a lot of the orders come in at late night and in the evening, and that provides sales that they wouldn't receive otherwise. There's the question of the profitability. Delivery is a rapidly growing service, and people really like it. It's McDonald's knows that better than anybody else. And I think the franchisees definitely see that too. And so, you know, they want to continue having the service. It's just whether the finances work out.
Jonathan, I want to continue our conversation here about McDonald's this morning and delivery and the franchisees. And this isn't the first time recently that franchisees have been upset with McDonald's main corporate over things. How is the relationship generally between the two?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, historically, McDonald's has had a pretty good relationship, but over the past year in particular, it's sort of deteriorated a bit, and it's been a lot over, the delivery that we talked about, and also the remodel requirements. McDonald's has told its franchisees that it wants them to remodel all of their locations over the next 3 years. McDonald's is contributing quite a bit, about 55% of the cost, but still, you know, these are $300,000 to $500,000 remodels, and franchisees have to, in many of these cases, these locations were remodeled relatively recently. And the debt hasn't been paid off on those recent remodels in some cases. So McDonald's banded together and created this National Owners Association. It's an independent franchise association, and it's the first one in their history.
And so they're trying to improve the communication and the relationship between the two. This comes after, earnings report from McDonald's, where they talk again about how they plan to grow in the coming year, and delivery was part of that. I know Steve Easterbrook in his conference call talked a little bit about the growth opportunities with delivery. So it's one that's front and center for the focus there.
Yeah. Well, and McDonald's sees this as a real opportunity as consumers are going in this direction. And McDonald's has so many locations, and the vast majority of Americans are relatively close to a McDonald's. And if you think about the delivery economics and how it works, is that means, you know, it's relatively, it doesn't take as much time for Uber Eats to deliver a McDonald's as it would a Taco Bell or a Burger King or a Wendy's. They think that the quality of the product that you ultimately get delivered is going to be a lot better. And so they see this as a real big opportunity to improve their convenience.
You have mentioned how they're looking at competitors, too. Let's talk a little bit about that. What are McDonald's competitors doing in this space? So the Wendy's, the Burger King's, some of those other places that they compete with, they're all delivering, aren't they?
The vast majority of them are in some form or fashion. Taco Bell just recently launched delivery with Grubhub. Burger King is rapidly expanding delivery. Wendy's is rapidly expanding delivery. Subway is rapidly expanding delivery. So the vast majority of large chains are doing this. It's really one of the biggest trends in the industry right now.
Do you think that Uber Eats is going to keep the deal here, or do you think McDonald's might be able to find a better deal with, let's say, Grubhub, another Chicago company?
No, for now it appears that McDonald's is pretty happy with Uber Eats. I mean, I'd imagine if at some point, you know, they decide to renegotiate, it's possible that they could go with somebody else. But right now it seems that McDonald's is pretty happy with that particular partner, and they're going to continue with a single company option, which is what most companies do. These chains are usually going with just a single company, and they have a contract and they negotiate a better deal.
Yeah, if you had to predict what's going to happen here, what would you say how this is going to come out in the wash?
I would imagine that in some fashion, McDonald's kind of, you know, negotiates with Uber Eats or works something out with franchisees on giving them a little bit of royalty relief on the issue of on the fees that they pay, because I think this is too McDonald's thinks this isn't too important. I think the franchisees think it's too important. You know, delivery is a growing service. And so I think ultimately they work it out.
Jonathan, thanks for your expertise this morning. Good talking with you again.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Thanks for being here. Jonathan Mays, executive editor at Restaurant Business Magazine. You can read more of his work at restaurantbusinessonline.com.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
We're back on the Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Thanks for being here with us this morning at 5:40 now on WGN. More than half of college students, according to a 2018 report from the American College Health Association, said that they'd experienced overwhelming anxiety in the past year, and nearly half of them had trouble functioning. It is stress and anxiety over numerous issues, including money. And here to talk about it this morning is Brad Wolverton, an investigative reporter, also a freelancer for the New York Times, Politico, and NerdWallet, among others. He has written about this particular topic for the New York Times. Brad, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
This is a big deal. I kind of touched on generally the numbers, but what kind of percentages are we talking about here involving students and anxiety?
Well, I'll give you one example. So UCLA, about a decade ago, they were helping out about like less than 10% of their student population. This is like the school that more kids apply to than any in the country, and it's a huge state public institution, really elite in terms of like how selective it is. So just recently they've basically let us know that about 20% of students now seek mental health services from them. So just in that decade, there was this dramatic rise. There's just so many kids who come in with stresses, and these are stresses from the big stressors like, you know, there's school shootings or threat of school shootings, there's trauma from suicides and sexual assaults, but it's just everyday stuff. A lot of it is, you know, social media pressures, these academic expectations. I mean, kids come to school not expecting, you know, it's not easy to get jobs, but, you know, they come in and they don't feel like there's a lot of margin for error. So they're stressed out. There's a lot of anxiety, and you just see it at institutions of all sizes.
Your story for the New York Times, you write about some of this. One of the first couple of lines here, I'm literally fighting for my life, is the email that one of the students wrote to a professor. That sort of jumps off the page at you to say how serious this is. This isn't just people, you know, worried about the day. It's people who literally are in a life-threatening situation.
Yeah, I mean, I was struck by how many students were in these really precarious situations. It isn't just like we're stressed out and we're worried about our grades and money, but there are a lot of kids who come to school with really severe depression, and you know, the anxiety can lead to a lot of that. But it was really daunting for a lot of kids to just kind of make it through the day. So that was an example of one student who had a severe case of bipolar disorder. He's been on lots of different medications. I think it's easy to forget that, you know, you think about the stresses, but there are a lot of kids who have faced really severe problems.
What's different now than, let's say, 10 or 15 or 20 years ago? You've mentioned a couple of different issues that students are dealing with. Obviously, money is probably one of the top issues. Does this have anything to do with their growing up during the Great Recession?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think there's certainly, you know, when you see your family members and friends, it's really not uncommon at all for people to lose jobs, lose homes. I think you're also seeing one of the things that, you know, is there a mental health crisis? I think it's kind of one of the questions I was exploring. What has partly led to this is that people are more comfortable talking about it. So there's not as much of a stigma about saying that you have mental health challenges, whether it's ADHD or whether it's stuff as severe as bipolar. It helps that a lot of students come to school more open and willing to talk about it, having dealt with it as kids. And it also helps that schools have been really open about encouraging students to be open about it. And so more students have come forward and identified as having those issues.
And so what's being done here to help? Colleges are generally pretty safe places for students. They provide all kinds of services. How are they dealing with this?
There's a variety of approaches. You know, you have some big schools like University of Texas that have they have a more efficient way of identifying problems among students, and then they funnel them into like group therapy sessions, basically. So and some of these can be really effective because students realize they're not alone and they can find support groups that way. There's other ways. There's Penn State has these efforts called drop-in clinics where you basically can stop in at places all over campus and just without an appointment quickly see someone who's a licensed therapist who can kind of answer questions or provide some guidance for you in terms of how to reduce your stress or deal with a relationship issue. You know, there's one school that has these things that are called nap pods. These are basically like, it's like a really sophisticated dentist chair with this thing that comes over your head. And it sort of reduces your stress by kind of calming you and putting you in this, you know, place where you're listening to white noise or nice calming music. And these things help. I mean, they don't help the students with the most severe problems, but at least there's different approaches that schools are trying.
Your story does highlight that some schools are having some trouble with this. Wait times for some of these counseling services at some schools is upwards of 7 days.
Yeah, I mean, there's some places, I mean, I think that's the average. You know, the average is that you're going to take about a week before you even get an appointment. At some places, it's a couple months. So you sit on this waiting list. If you don't have money, you can't really go off campus to see counselors. I think the schools are saying that it's, in some cases, isn't really their place to service the mental health needs of all their students. Most students and parents really believe that's the case, that if anything, you know, you should take care of the kids and it can actually provide a better return on investment because, you know, you keep more of them healthy and enrolled and you keep their money coming in. But I think there are also some severe challenges that schools are facing because, the students can pose threats or they can be actually liabilities to the institution. So in some cases, there's concerns that the schools are not allowing the kids to stay enrolled, and the students are sort of grumbling about that.
Yeah, and then they go out again back into society where they probably are finding less services. Do these schools have any eye on the future? Because these are the young people that are going to be the workforce of tomorrow. We need to have them out and healthy in the workforce.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does. There's the suggestion that if you keep them happy and enrolled, that's a good thing. But in the long run, you want them, I mean, your job as an institution of higher learning is not to just like teach them lots of things to educate them, but it's actually to help provide them the ability to go out and make more money in the future so that they can be, you know, good, active members of society. And so I do think the colleges have the right intention, but they are, in some cases, overwhelmed with the numbers of students, and they're not really prepared to deal with it.
The 22-year-old student that you highlighted from Ithaca College, how is he doing? Is there a happy ending to that story?
I mean, it's a severe case. You know, the guy's been on a lot of medications, and, you know, there were times, you know, I interviewed him multiple times and was really open about the challenges he's faced, and he's been in really some really dark places. As you started this example by saying, he sent an email to a professor saying, you know, that he's basically fighting for his life. I think that when you have a condition like that, you're always susceptible to slipping back into that dark place. But for now, he's a really uplifting individual. He really inspired me just listening to how he's fought through this. And so let's hope for the best for him.
Brad, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Great story at NewYorkTimes.com. We're going to link out to it as well. And again, we appreciate you being on with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve.
Brad Wolverton, reporter and investigative reporter. His latest piece in the New York Times, but he's written for Politico and NerdWallet and others as well. We'll link out to his story. As students struggle with stress and depression, colleges act as counselors, in the New York Times at NewYorkTimes.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a negative open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are down 113 points, nearly 0.5%. NASDAQ futures off nearly a third. S&P futures are off about 0.25%. Now the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. In yesterday's grain trade at the Chicago Board of Trade, the commodity that took the heavy hit was wheat. Wheat ended down 20.5 cents a bushel, with a March contract at 4.66¼. March corn down 4.5 cents. But March soybeans ended 0.5 cent higher at 9.10¾. On the other hand, looking at livestock futures yesterday, hog futures again dropped. Concerns about mounting supplies overshadowed hopes that Washington and Beijing will resolve the trade war that has reduced shipments of soybeans and pork to China. At the end of the day, the June lean hog contract down $1.45 a hundredweight. The June live or the April live cattle up 52 cents a hundredweight, and the April feeder cattle contract up 45 cents a hundredweight. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue spoke at an event in Washington yesterday, said the United States will keep pressing China for intellectual property safeguards in trade talks, regardless of Beijing's pledge to purchase 10 million tons of U.S. soybeans in the near term. When asked about the time frame of the 10 million ton purchase, the secretary said, "That is near term. The impression I had, it is imminent." He'll be speaking at Commodity Classic in Orlando, Florida this weekend. I would guess he will have more to say on the trade situation between China and the United States. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. A couple of stories before we leave you this morning. Former Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen says President Trump doesn't have a firm grasp on what the central bank does. In an interview with American Public Media yesterday, Yellen also said she doesn't think the president has a grasp of economic policy. She went on to say that she doubts Trump would be able to identify the Fed's goals, maximum employment, and price stability. Trump decided not to reappoint Yellen to a second four-year term as chair of the central bank. Before his election, Trump accused her of keeping interest rates low to help make President Obama more wealthy. Federal Reserve in general has been a frequent target of the president, who was upset last year by a series of interest rate hikes with his current Federal Reserve chair, and that is ongoing today. Hulu is changing its pricing plans. The basic on-demand streaming service is decreasing in price by $2 to $5.99 a month. The cost of basic Hulu Plus is a live TV subscription service. Will go up, though, $5 a month with limited ads and $7 a month for ad-free. The changes take effect today for new subscribers and will show up in the next billing cycle for current customers. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, February 26th. The economic spotlight is on housing and consumer confidence today. December housing starts are due out. Analysts see housing starts up slightly at an annual rate of 1.26 million units. The Case-Shiller Home Price Index for December is also out. The forecast calls for a 0.4% increase over November. The Federal Housing Finance Agency House Price Index for December is also due. It, too, is projected to show a 0.4% increase in prices. February Consumer Confidence Index winds up the morning's reports. Experts are calling for a strong rebound after the index fell sharply in January and December. We'll also get a look at the Red Book and a couple of Fed speakers out there today, including the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, who speaks to the House Financial Services Committee. On the earnings calendar, AutoZone, Home Depot, J.M. Smucker, LendingTree, Macy's, Shutterstock, and Thomson Reuters will release earnings before the opening bell. Papa John's and TiVo will follow after the closing bell. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, February the 26th.